extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, who do not know what to do with their hands. Charlie Davies, David Goss, producing Anders in the back doing his thing on the group chat, letting us know where we're going wrong and when we need to wrap. Big show coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. The tides might be changing in the CONCACAF Champions League. Tell me we've heard that before, but some big results this week in leg one of the quarterfinals for MLS teams. We will roll through those. We'll talk about MLS week two, everything there is to know on national TV games, and our best ESPN Plus games of the weekend. We're going to chat with Aaron Long of the New York Red Bulls. Back from that Achilles injury, the Red Bulls are undefeated, and maybe, just maybe, Aaron Long might be a part of this team going to Azteca and trying to get the U.S. qualified for the World Cup. And we will hit your mail in the mailbag, as always, 401-206-0MLS, extratimeinmlssoccer.com, at Extra Time. What's up, boys? How you feeling?
Let's go.
What are you doing with your hands? Like, I saw you, Charlie, like, for Dave gets hyped usually in the intro, but then you were following and you're like trying to one up each other. It's a good vibe to start the show.
Charlie, normally, if I lay a pass out there, he'll run onto it. Charlie will pick it up if I'm throwing it out there.
He's great. He's great with the through balls. He's great.
Yeah, the body language. He's like, oh, look, if I don't make the run, who's going to do it right now? Look, a bunch of good stuff you can check out as we get into it today. Go to MLSsoccer.com. DeMarcus Beasley is now a featured columnist for MLSsoccer.com.
Nice.
That is an awesome sentence to say. It's awesome to get his insights, and I don't want to tease it too much. I don't know if I'm even allowed to tease it, but you're going to be hearing or seeing the name DeMarcus Beasley a lot more around these parts, and we're really, really excited about that. Call-up, great episode this week. Nadia Nadim came on and basically, I don't know, kind of made it clear to me that I can do more with my life, that I can be more true to my convictions. I can live with courage more. Not as much as she can, but I can aspire to that. But it's an incredible, inspiring interview from the call-up. Over on YouTube, maybe the stupidest piece of content that we have going around. Why your team will win MLS Cup. I was asked to write a script about why every single team. Yes, you, Cincinnati, Charlotte, and Inter Miami. Why you can win Cup as well. So go check it out.
Were you serious about all of them?
No, I was not. Okay. I mean, I was just going to say, I had Adrian Heath dumpster diving and like a Back to the Future riff, so I tried to have as much fun with it as I could. MLSsoccer.com, your home for all the highlights, everything you need. Plus, hey, subscribe, rate us as well, and can sign up for Pick 6, presented by BetMGM and MLS Fantasy. Let's talk CCL. Could we see, says Austin Rogers, an all-MLS semifinal in CCL this year? Are we on our way to potentially having that? On one side of the bracket, we've got New York City FC with a 3-1 advantage. On Comunicaciones, they got to go to Guatemala next with that advantage. And we have Seattle with a 3-0 win at home against Club Leon. And then the Revs, last night, Charlie, 3-0 at Snowy Gillette against Pumas. And Montreal, rep the crest, a very acceptable result at Azteca, losing 1-0 to Cruz Azul. Tell me about last night, Charlie. Were you at Gillette? Were you there? How did you experience it? What were the vibes?
One, I was not at Gillette, which was nice because I could watch this in a nice, warm living room. So that was nice to be at home to watch this. And what I did see that I was a little concerned about in the first half was being wasteful in front of goal. And we've kind of seen this with the Revolution throughout, you know, I'd say the past 4 months or so, where they can generate a lot of chances, but they're not scoring and capitalizing on those chances. And in particular, This season in 2022, they've been pretty good as far as getting into the final third and creating those mismatches. Yet, usually the shot is in the bleachers, or we're not seeing a shot being taken. First half, I was like, oh man, they're going down that wrong path. Then they started putting their shots on target, and then Adam Buxa, who felt like he was trying, and when you try too hard, it takes away from your game. And then all of a sudden, he sees it hit the back of the net, and it felt like the floodgates opened. They were so much better than Pumas. Pumas literally didn't have a player that you were frightened of. There wasn't a player that was really going to hurt you, and I think the Revolution knew that, and they played to their advantage.
That celebration from Buxa felt telling. That didn't feel like a normal, like, yeah, I got a goal, been looking for it sort of celebration. It looked like he had something to get off his back.
A lot. And I'm sure, you know, you can look at where the world is at this point. You can also look at the World Cup coming up. There's a lot of pressure on himself to perform. There are a lot of clubs sniffing around, European clubs sniffing around about, you know, purchasing him, and that didn't come to fruition. So he's trying to play his absolute best and maximize his potential because he's talked about it. Europe is where he wants to be. That's his dream. And he's using the Revolution as a stepping stone. And for him, you have to score goals. It's all about your stats, your numbers. Yes, the hold up play and being involved, but he's got it. When he gets his chance, he has to finish. And I think it was a huge step in the right direction for him.
Dave, this was one of those moments where, like, the night before it had been 3-0, and you texted me and you're like, you want to come on MLS today and get hyped? And I would have if I didn't have plans, but I was hyped. I was alone in my living room just watching and, like, rooting for every moment from the Sounders. And then we got New England doing this. That has a way of like turning the optimism faucet on for CCL, and we know how that normally ends, like, you know, with somebody crimping the hose and you looking down the end and getting splashed in the face. But this was a good sign, I feel like.
That was, again, a very Midwestern moment from you. Someone crimping the hose and then you get slapped.
You never played that trick on someone?
Not really. I get
what's wrong with the hose.
I get what you're saying, but not really.
Yeah. Probably went a little bit too far down the line.
That was great.
Semi-suburban dad line there.
There was a moment this week during the Revs game where it was like, they're pumping these teams. Right, you cross the line between, oh, it was a knockdown at the far post, they steal a goal, game states, and it was Seattle doing what they wanted at will against a team that was in the final of the Apertura a few months ago and is top five right now. And then you go through NYCFC getting their performance, and then you get to the Revs, and we, you know, we've said this a lot. I think over the last 3 years, this has changed. But it was one, watching an MLS team play their exact game, not shifting how they had to play against this opponent. It was the Revs being the Revs, but it was against Pumas, a big team out of Liga MX. And at some point in the second half, after Buxa scores the goal, because up until then, you are worried, as Charlie said, are they going to get the result that they've earned? Even with a 3-0 from Seattle, you're thinking about all those saves in that game that it could have been 4 or 5 or 6. And then I think when Buxa gets the second, and then Josie Altidore comes off the bench for this team to be an additional piece at tired defenders, it really felt like we've entered a different phase. And even if an MLS team doesn't win this thing in the end, which I'm hopeful, and I've never been more hopeful that will be the case, because I don't think we're relying on a golden TFC or an LAFC. All four of these MLS teams are capable of winning this thing. Montreal maybe a step behind, but the other three are all equally as good in MLS. Their rosters are as deep. They all have match-winning talent. In every single one of these games, the best player on the field was an MLS player. And that was both from performance and from their overall quality of who they are, right? You got to the stadium yesterday. Carlos Hill is the best player in that stadium. You can say the same about Tati in his game, probably Maxi as well, maybe soon, Talis Magno. You can definitely say the same, I think, in that Seattle game with the way Roldan played, with the quality João Paulo has and the way he played, without Nico Ladero and
the threat that Jordan Morris was able to pose, even though maybe the finishing wasn't always where he wanted
to be. God, I would have loved a breakaway goal from Jordan Morris to close that game out at 4-0. But yeah, all of this felt different. It felt real. It felt repeatable. It felt confident. And 3-0 is not, they won the home leg, can they hang on the road? 3-0 is if Seattle or the Revs can get a goal on the counter, on a set piece, whatever. All things both these teams are very good at. These series are already over. Like, this is unique. Here's my stat that I love right now. Coming into this year, MLS teams had beaten Liga MX teams by 3 goals twice ever in CCL. It's already happened 3 times this year, twice in this round alone. So this is not the Red Bulls beating Cholos or knocking off Chivas for one game and TFC beating Club America. This is different than anything we've ever seen.
I will say I'm going to reserve my... I'm going to be hopeful. I'm always hopeful from the start. But I'm going to sort of like hit the governor on it and like run it at 90 instead of going all the way to like 160 here. Like, I just want to see us get through. I want to see us go to Mexico and get results. But I think the point you made about away goals is huge. Because in the past, we'd be celebrating like 2-1 wins by the skin of our teeth. Right? Or like, oh man, we got through,
or
but they have the away goal
losses.
And you're going back.
Yeah,
right. And you have the away goal and you're going back to, or two away goals. And you're like, well, maybe we can do it. And like, we're still sort of there with Montreal. That's the, it's not an elephant in this room, but it is like not as good though as at Azteca. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, just, I think what you said about playing on MLS's team's terms is such a difference. And for Seattle in that game, yes, their terms were sort of like, you have the ball, Leon. Good. Like normal CCL terms that we often see from MLS Liga MX, but we're so much more dangerous than you are playing on our terms that this could be a touchdown game. We could go for six on this. Let's go back to Carlos Hill.
I would say at home that's the case because both of them were at home. Had they started, I think, playing on the road, it may have been different. Though I'll say what Montreal did is a win for them. To only lose 1-0 to Cruz Azul is a win for Montreal because they have a real chance at home. They have a real chance.
It was a little miraculous as well. But hey, man, Montreal and CCL. Let's talk Carlos Hill real quick and then run through these other games. He's a bad, bad man. And when you have a Buxa or a Josie on the field and the ability to hold the ball up and let him run into dangerous spaces, and then you have two runners on either side, and we saw that with Tejan, and that's how, you know, Tejan became Tejan, really. We saw it with Leggett on the first goal. We saw it on the third goal. When you give Carlos Hill runners on both sides of him and space to run into and a disorganized back line, he is going to shred people. Absolutely terrorize.
And you throw in DeJuan Jones, right? Another option down the left flank who really can run by anybody.
Let me read you this, Charlie. Gustavo Lopez, when are we going to start talking about DeJuan Jones in the U.S. men's national team roster? Remember, he was in camp, and they didn't keep him around. They sent him home a little early, I believe, in January, if I remember correctly. And then also Gustavo asks, and is Sebastian Leggett a new man in New England? They played through DeJuan in the first half. Mm-hmm. Like, it was tilted heavily left. And Leggett looks like he's approaching his best, it feels like, with the refs.
I would say on two fronts, DeJuan, the reason why he was probably sent back was because it's just that new experience for him. It's a whole nother level, especially as a left back. And he's kind of made it his own, but he's never been a left back his whole life. He's been an attacking player and preferably on the right. So it's been a process under Bruce Arena, and he can take on anyone because he's just so athletic. He's a freak when it comes to his athleticism. And so I think that the passing accuracy when he's on the ball, making the right decision and services and being in those dangerous positions in the final third, the timing, that's all a work in progress. And then when you move to the national team, I think he was like, oh man, I have to improve in a lot of areas. Not major reconstruction, but I just have to improve. And I think since he's come back, he has improved. He's playing balls in those tight areas to the feet of the strikers. He's making good runs, well-timed, perfect service. When you look at the first goal, he plays a perfect cutback, which I don't even know if he'd be able to see it, right to the feet of Carlos Hill, who then heel passes it to Leggett for the goal. What a fantastic run and play from DeJuan Jones in that instance. I do see him being back in the national team for sure at some point because he's only improving and the type of kid he is. And then I think on Sebastian Leggett, he's still trying to figure out where to move, how Carlos Hill plays, his tendencies, but also Buxa and Bo, how they move. We are going to only continue to see Sebastian Leggett get better.
All right, let's talk real quick Montreal. This is perfectly acceptable. Alan from Montreal, Dave, says CF Montreal just played a worst okay result game in Mexico in MLS CCL history. Still trying to reconcile that horrendous performance with a pretty acceptable 1-0 loss in Azteca against Cruz Azul. No Romo Kyoto for this game.
No.
So that's, you know, it was Georgie and it was Joaquin up top.
And also on top of that, but Kamal Miller not healthy to go from the start. So you have to shuffle that back line that's been really good. You already don't have Sam Piet, so you're a spot a bit thinner in this team. Mason Toy hasn't been around the team. It doesn't feel like Kai Kamara's already 90 minutes match fit, so you don't have a genuine center forward out there. And then Schwan, yeah, I'm working on it. Also not available for this game, who I think is right now their best option at wingback. So they were legitimately three starters down for this game, which is a tough task. And it's a tough task going at altitude, playing in Mexico City, playing against a legitimate, you know, strong team in Cruz Azul and a team that's in pretty good form. And they got outplayed. In the first 45 minutes, they got worked. They were able to hang on, smashing Brezza. Phenomenal set of saves from him. And then I thought when Kamal Miller came on for the last second half and the last 30 or so minutes, I actually thought Montreal started to knock the ball around pretty well. They didn't give up chances from that moment on. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't create chances. So you leave yourself a situation where if Miller's healthy, you come home, you are a good defensive team. It's reasonable to say you can get a shutout at the Big O. The question is just, can you get a goal or two? And if Kyoto's in the team and that's sort of where he feasts, there's reason to be optimistic if you are a Montreal fan. And in what we have seen in the past for MLS teams, that's where you come away with this is a decent result, right? The way MLS teams have hung on and then given up two goals in stoppage time. Even what happened to Montreal against Santos in the last round, like that's sort of been the history for MLS teams, and Montreal was able to avoid that. So I think there's reason for them to be confident in the second leg, have that belief, and understand that what they did was acceptable.
I just think back to, for them, that CCL final. Remember, they were at Azteca against America, and they got a 1-1 draw in the opening leg there, and it was sort of a shock. And America had to come back. I was hoping that they would find just a, like, I was looking for a Kai Kamara dunk, not going to lie. When they brought on Kai and they had all those set pieces, I was thinking, please just get to one. It didn't happen for Montreal, but this is more than acceptable for them headed home. How about Tuesday night? Actually, before we get to Tuesday, I just got to shout out Earl Edwards Jr. real quick, because we don't think we mentioned his name there. That save that he had right before the Books a second.
Yeah,
just sort of, just sort of like throwing himself at a spot in the air and making himself as big as humanly possible and then preserving the shutout. His performances so far and Matt Turner's stead have been really, really impressive and a huge moment for him personally and professionally, because we all said when Turner was going to Arsenal, they got to go hit the market. They got to go find somebody. Well, Earl Edwards Jr. is sitting behind saying, I've been waiting for this opportunity. And right now he's making the most of it. So congratulations to him on that front. NYCFC 3, Comunicaciones 1. Maxi's a legend. Getting goals from Tati, Maxi, and Tyus Magno. That's about as good as it probably gets for NYCFC. But, Dave, Comunicaciones is fun and good, and I've enjoyed every moment of watching them in this tournament.
Yeah, I think everyone who's watched them so far understands they're not going away in the second leg, right? Like, this is a team with an absurd amount of self-belief, quality as well. They pushed the Rapids in leg one in the last round and should have had more, got the one goal, and then they hang on for 70 minutes down a man in Denver in the snow for a team out of Guatemala. Ridiculous. Then they come in here and they're the home team in Hartford against NYCFC. And it's just Guatemalan flags, except the one supporter section for NYCFC, Guatemalan flags across the field. The energy in the second half, they came out flying, but in the first half, NYCFC were themselves. They were cutting, everything's moving. Magno's coming in, Tati's dropping wide. You've got Maxi Morales picking up space wherever he wants. Jason making runs now from the wing back position with Amundsen. It was pretty, it was impressive. This team, and I think one of the reasons I'm hopeful about all these MLS teams is they are the same team that finished last year. They're not finding ways to get new guys involved. They're not relearning themselves. They're not bringing in a big piece that they're hopeful can figure it out in their first two games. Like, they are who they are. And they were lucky for it to not be 3-2. But at 3-1, it's a protectable lead for them to go down to Guatemala with.
Well, you're also hoping you don't lose someone in the summer, right? So this team can be continue to build off of where they were last year. And I think you touched on it, Tyus Magno, right? This is a player that can be really special. And this attacking group, defensively attacking, they are one. And I think Ronnie Dyla probably doesn't get enough credit for what he's been able to do.
I completely agree. Just I was thinking as I watched that game and as I watched Tyus Magno in his best moments, because he still has some – He still has some rough moments in the league. He's had some invisible moments, but in CCL, he's been very active, really good. You have Tati, who started as a winger in this NYCFC group and sort of got his feet underneath him, got a little confidence, and got promoted up top. I could see that same sort of trajectory for Tyus Magno coming down the line, whether it be, you know, when Tati is sold or whether it's Ebert for another 6 months and you just see how it goes and spot starts for Magno. But he has, it feels like, a lot of the skills to play on that center forward position should they need him to do so down the line or even now.
There's one glaring difference between the two. Tati led the league in fouls last year and would literally tear a wall down to score a goal. And Tyus Magno, very much, especially with that finish that got called off, was like, let's see how soft I can tap this ball that it'll still go in.
But listen, I'm glad you brought that finish up because that finish was incredible.
Yeah.
Magno hit the slow-mo button for the entire game and was like,
but it is. It's
waited for guys to fly by, got his little angle, and then almost like, you know, like soul rolled it in. It wasn't a soul roll, but it felt like that sort of disrespect. It was amazing.
It is if you had to describe the difference between a Brazilian player and an Argentine player who played in Uruguay. That is the glaring difference between the two of them, but there's obviously a ton of quality in both.
Yeah, I got a ton of talent. How about Seattle 3, Club Lyon 0? The group chat was just absolutely popping from Anders celebrating. I don't know. I mean, he popping bottles, popping fireworks. This man was hyped on Tuesday night. And if Seattle could finish, it might have been 6-0.
Yeah. I mean, rightfully so, right? Because I think for Seattle fans and supporters of Anders, you feel like this is the chance. This is the chance to, yeah, we've won MLS Cups. We won US Open Cups. Now we can win CCL. They have a great opportunity in front of them. So with this current group, I mean, everything was there for you. And all of a sudden you have to deal with injuries. Rui Diaz, no Ladero. And things might have looked against the Club Lyon. Probably not so good.
To do it that way, that's the thing, right? Like previous MLS, that doesn't happen if you're missing Rui Diaz, if you're missing Ladero, two best 11 MVP style players. Like you almost sort of write it off years past. And instead, Sounders played it completely on their terms. Can we just, two players I want to highlight, Obed Vargas, who at 16 years old is doing things again in a previous era of MLS that we just, let alone the performances in CCL, but just at his age in this team, doing what he's doing is incredible. And then Christian Roldan. Like Christian Roldan, there's a reason why Seattle's had so much success over the years. And I know it's a large group thing, but he is so central to so much of it. And he just seems to thrive in these sorts of moments. Like the uber competitive, prove yourself, what do you got moments are Christian Roldan moments.
Yeah, Paul and Sam put out a piece with anonymous interviews of all the CSOs around MLS. And he came up first as the best contract, the guy you'd start a team with. Like in MLS, there are few teams that have that piece, which is a consistent guy, a guy who knows your culture, a winner, flexible positionally, and then obviously the quality of the contract that he has on your books and how he affects you. And he's, again, just filling in where you need him. Ilodero's out? Okay, in the attack. Okay, Josh Atencio's out, center mid. Jao Paulo's out, center mid. Right back, if he really had to still, he could probably give you a top performance. That's who he is, and when he has that edge, it's like, the amount of fouls he draws because guys don't expect him to just try for the ball, stick his head in, make that extra run, make that effort. I mean, that's the penalty kick that he earns in this game is just pure effort. No one thinks he's coming. And he does that consistently. The blind ball he hits across the back line. He did it for Jordan.
Such an underrated passer.
Yeah.
And his vision and his timing and his technique.
And and coming from that right wing is a good spot for him because he can sort of see the field in front of him and line those passes up. He was awesome. He was great. I thought Jao Paulo was incredible in this game, and that allows Obed Vargas to sort of find his feet and get this confidence like we saw with Atencio last year. And just the quality of this roster. I mean, I went back and looked at it, and maybe Obed Vargas won't have the career we think he will have, and he'll be the next Ndwala Bawana, and it'll look similar, but last time they went and played in CCL against the Mexican team, they started Jordan McCrary at one fullback spot. I think Ike Wolfram, whatever his name was, started in those games. Like guys that
legend,
yeah, guys that you are not around, weren't around for a while, and probably you don't want to have minutes in big games like this. And then you look at this game and like Alex Roldan's an El Salvador full international at this point. You know, you're getting performances. You have big time players across the field that you can lose a Lodeiro and Rui Diaz and still be able to put it together a game like this.
And you can be wasteful. Let's honestly just say that finishing. They had the opportunities and the quality of opportunities to have made this 4-5, maybe even 6. And Brian Schmetzer said that afterwards in an incredible press conference in which he referenced like the metaverse, the dataverse, all sorts of different things. Pretty incredible. By the way, in the group chat, just a correction here, a little PTI or whatever the ESPN show where they have the guy correcting at the end is. Anders says, take Wolf Ikram out your mouth. He's a legend. He's scoring goals in the Champions League, Dave. So don't speak badly of him. Show some respect. All right, you know, we'll get back to CCL for the previews, and the second legs are coming up, but a nice round one in the quarterfinals for most of the MLS teams, and I'll include Montreal. And now let's get some news and notes in here. Bradley Wright Phillips, we'll talk about him with Aaron Longo later in the show, but an absolute legend, signed a one-day contract to retire as a New York Red Bull. Great stuff to see him retire in those colors. It's really the only way it should have gone. Career stats in MLS, 234 games, 117 goals, 34 assists, two-time Golden Boot winner. That magical 14 season and 16 season, twice in the best 11, same years, twice an all-star, and also the comeback player of the year in 2020. Charlie, just I remember when he came on trial, and it was Thierry Henry years, and I didn't know who Bradley Wright Phillips was, but I think he was at like Charlton then, had kind of bounced around, had started his career at Man City and had some pop, and you know, obviously has a legacy there with his dad and what his dad did, but BWP made his own legacy in MLS and one that I think is going to live for a long time, both as a player, but also as a representative of the Red Bulls and the league. I mean, it's just an absolute hugely lucky for us to get Bradley Wright Phillips and to be able to witness what he did.
He's a top man, both on the pitch and off. One that I always loved competing against just because he made you perform at your best, because as a striker, and I get to watch him on the opposite side of the field, you're watching him make these runs, you're watching him score goals, and you're looking at your center backs like, you got to do this. But he's just he makes it look effortless. You know, his runs are so well timed, great finisher, right foot, left foot, in with his head. One of those players that doesn't come around too often. And he had a little bit of the ingenuity with him, just from his father, I think, you know, picking up these tricks in certain moments. Like he had a good wide array of different abilities within the box. You know, he could pull off a bicycle kick, he could pull off a scissor kick, you know, and then his patented celebration with the heel click, I couldn't stand that. I thought it was cool, but I couldn't stand it, because you know when you saw it, you knew he was scoring against you. But I had a number of times where I've gone to New York and we've hung out in person, and you get a good chance to see what he's about. And he's a family man, and he's just a good guy. So wish him the absolute best, and I'm sure he'll have a successful transition.
You're a Rebel guy, Dave. You have any memories? Like, you know, Rebel 2, but. You have any big memories?
Yeah, I do.
I've seen a lot of BWP goals at Red Bull Arena over the years, because that's where we often went to games.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go back to my breadbasket here and take it away and say the thing that does stand out was the first two or three years the team existed, he was at every Red Bull 2 home game. He would just come and watch. He would go talk to the players. I talked to him after the games, and he's watching and talking about what he thought about each of these young pieces. And we'll talk to Aaron Long in a little bit. Aaron Long was one of them. Like, he has always cared about this club, but he's also cared about the game and what it means for people. His brother as well. Sean came here, and he didn't come here to play for retirement. He didn't come here for the money. He came to learn more about soccer and see it in a different country and see it at other levels. And Brad was always the same as well. And I talked to him on the field in Columbus after they won Campeones Cup last year. And he was with his family. He was in a good spot. He goes, you know, I wish I was healthier. I wish I was scoring more. This feels really good. And then the next thing he said was he just starts talking about guys in the locker room and the young guys that are coming through. And I think he talked about Aiden Morris and trying to help him along. Like, that's sort of where his mindset has been a lot, outside of him making himself great, which It always astounds me the way he changed his body to play for the Red Bulls and what he was able to put together year after year in that system, in that style, how different it was from what he came up in. But that's what stands out for me, and that's why I think it'll be really special if he can stay involved, and I believe he is, with the club going forward. And I think he's someone who could do really great things for the game in this country at in his post-playing career.
Completely agree. Let's pour one out real quick, Charlie, for Elsinho, who also retired. You were at the Union when Elsinho was there, correct?
Did he ever meg you?
No, he did not.
Because you don't close down hard.
That's right. Yeah, no. Well, Charlie's a smart man on the training field. Charlie's at a different point in his career. He's like, look, all you young bucks, you're closing down Elsinho. I'm watching you. Got to save these legs for the weekend.
I can't tell you. We played a lot of small sided, and we were on the same team. So. Man,
that's a veteran move right there.
It was
a just like when you start choosing teams, like kind of inch over toward Elsinho, be like, oh, it's really easy, Jim. We're right next to each other. Just striker, midfielder. This will work.
Yeah, I was not going to defend Elsinho. And if there ever was an instance where I had to defend him, I was calling in help. I said, hey, you go first. I know he's going to go to the right sometimes or try the snake. And so I never had to deal with him. But just absolutely one of the best 1v1 players this league has ever seen.
What makes him so good at that? Player to player. Tell us what makes mm-hmm. him so good.
He can just unbalance defenders with how quick he is. You don't think he can move left and right and be so shifty, but he has this way of just like dangling his leg near the ball. And so defenders think, oh, I can get it. I'm quicker than he is, or I can read this. And he takes a short touch and leaves his leg dangling. And as soon as you move, he cuts you inside or outside. And he's already ready with the next touch before you can adjust. And that's what makes him so difficult to deal with, because he can move right or left, right? And we talk about players. Typically, a right-footed player, they like to go right because they're going to be on the stronger foot. He's a player who can beat you left or right, and he can use his right foot with the snake to beat you to your left. Beat you to his left. So he's just a one of those players that doesn't come around too often, super skilled, but also he wasn't selfish, right? This is a player that was always smiling. He approached the game like, man, I'm grateful to be here. I love the game, and I'm going to be happy. I'm going to enjoy it. Nothing around me is going to take that away from me. And so there were times where he didn't play, and he's the best attacking player the Union have, and he'd be on the bench. He would never pout. He would never pout. And he would just be ready when his name was called. And I think that's what I appreciate about him most was he had that like Samba Brazilian style. It was always happy and go happy go lucky. And when he got on the ball, he was like, I love it. This is why I play the game, because I'm going to cherish this and I'm going to have fun.
130 games in MLS, 22 goals, 20 assists. And as Andres said in the rundown here, infinite defenders embarrassed. So good luck to Elsinho in his future endeavors. It was a pleasure having him and watching him in this league. Let's quick other notes. Houston traded Derek Jones to Charlotte for about $300,000 or so in GAM, split over 2 years. Where will he play for Charlotte? I mean, that's been the question we've been asking about Derek Jones for a long time, but I hope he finds a place where he can settle in and make good some of the talent that he has, because he has a lot of it. Some other huge news, and this is like for you and I, Dave, literally only probably. Minor Figueroa, Derek Christian says, training with Inter Miami, and that is a match made in heaven. We need to see Minor back in the league.
You know how robust in my CONCACAF deep space it would be if Damian Lowe and Minor Figueroa were the two starting center backs with Breck Shea at left back? Oh, baby.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Oh, baby. That's Gold Cup group stage stuff right there. God,
yes.
I will be watching every Inter Miami game. I can tell you that if that's the back line.
We will see if that goes down. Speaking of Inter Miami, they get our national TV slate started in week 3 at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. On Saturday, LAFC headed to Fort Lauderdale. This one's on Univision, TUDN, and Twitter, English, of course. Waiting to see what role, if any, Carlos Vela will play in this match. My guess would be the more if any side of that. Like, why rush him back? Why go cross-country? Why go to Miami in a game that you should be able to win without him and play him?
Doesn't he have to do the trial for his future Miami move?
I don't know.
Isn't this a big game?
But maybe he needs more time to house hunt. I don't know. It depends on
maybe it's an excuse. It's a work.
They're saying
it's a work personal trip. Nah. Double up.
TBD on Carlos Vela and the contract situation. That's going to be a story until it's resolved. Period. What are you looking for in this game, Charlie? What are you going to be watching closely?
I still want to see Brian Rodriguez continue to move the needle, because I think since he's come back, I think he's learned a lot about himself and what he needs to do to have success in this league, and to be a little bit more motivated and be a little bit more confident and decisive in the final third. So I want to see him take another step forward. I think LAFC, I think Charundolo has given them direction, and I think they've bought into him as a manager, which has been great to see to start this season. I know it's only two games in, but it's definitely a step in the right direction, especially defensively with this group, which was always a concern. And I think for Inter Miami, you just try and put in a better performance than you have, because it's been really poor.
What do you think about the Gonzalo Higuain body language watch?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know
how much does body language matter in a team, Charlie?
It matters a lot, immensely. And I can't stress it enough, especially when you're talking about the DP, right? The player who's played all over, has played in Champions League, has scored all these big goals, has played for the Argentine national team, has played with Messi, right? All these players are looking up to him. He's the leader. You know, you look at what Federico Higuain did for Columbus Crew when he was the captain for all those years. The body language was completely different. Right, it was a positive mentality. It was a lead by example mentality. Gonzalo Higuain, if you're going to lead a team and you're going to lead by example, then you got to be scoring two or three goals a game, right? And then you're like, okay, I'm doing it. Hey, look what I'm doing. I'm showing you. But if you're just yelling at players and barking at players and stopping and pouting, and the whole league is talking about your mannerisms and how you're looking down on your teammates, at some point, if it's not the manager, if it's not the GM, then it's David Beckham himself who has to sit down with Gonzalo Higuain and say, hey, you know, we brought you here, we believe in you. You got to start changing the way you lead, and you have to be inspiring your players and motivating and being positive rather than tearing them down. Right. So I think for me, that's something that, you know, I want to see from Gonzalo Higuain, because I've had conversations with him actually when he came here with Chelsea, and he was super positive. He was happy. He said he wanted to come to Major League Soccer. You don't see that when he plays.
And look, I'm not going to lie to you. I've said it on the show before. I've written it. I can't at some points completely blame him in that, given what's happened around him in this team. It's been a catastrophe. It's not what I expect he thought he was signing up for. But at some point, given your role on the team, given your salary, given a legacy that you hope to be building in Miami and MLS, you know, if that matters to him, I'm sure it does, you gotta show something a little bit different. We'll see if he can do that. Miami LAFC, Univision, Tudien, and Twitter English Audio, 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. All right, keeping it locked on Saturday. Big Fox, FOX, all caps, Fox Deporte, Seattle Sounders, smack dab in the middle of this CCL quarterfinal, hosting the LA Galaxy. The Seattle Sounders, Dave, are one of the few teams in the league, I think maybe the only in the Western Conference, I have to go look, with 0 points from two games. And Brian Schmetzer knows that people are talking about that, like us, and like Sounders and Hart and otherwise. And he was quick to point that out after that win against Lyon midweek. Let's switch it, though. And by the way, they are the only team in the Western Conference with no points. Let's switch it to the LA side, the visitors coming in. They don't have these distractions in CCL. Is what we've seen so far, 6 points, defensive, I'm not going to call them stalwarts yet, but much improved. Is this the real LA Galaxy? Is this the Galaxy we'll see all season long, or is this a mirage like last year was?
No, I think this is real. I think this is repeatable. Last year, it felt like Chicharito was playing out of his mind, that they had quality, but that it was shaky. And I think when you look at them this year, the ability for Delgado and Revelison to cover that ground in front of the back line, to help them, to make life easier, to then open things up for the attackers. And then you have Raheem Edwards, who's maybe not a lockdown defender, but a younger player at that position across from Araujo, who can cover ground, who can also help you out. I think that this is repeatable. I'm not sure they're supporters shield contenders, but also if they go 9 points out of the first three games and they take points off NYCFC and Seattle, then they put themselves in that conversation. So I believe in what I'm seeing from the Galaxy this year more than what I saw last year.
This is sort of the, I don't know if it's the Greg Vanney effect, Charlie, But this is kind of what Greg Vanney sold upon coming to the Galaxy, was to hit the reset button a bit. They still went and got the stars, mm-hmm. but to build out the rest of the roster and have the complementary pieces that allow them to hopefully do sort of what Toronto FC did. You know, they're not done with sort of the star building side of this yet, I don't think. And I don't think we've seen the best from Kevin Cabral this year. But when you look at the job Greg Vanney has done, what is a successful season this year as they sit on 6 points and head to Seattle?
Finishing in the top three in the regular season in the Western Conference.
How about, what if we give them four just for a little wiggle room? What if we say it's four and it's a home game?
Top four.
In the playoffs.
Yes.
Okay.
Home game. And I would say a deep run in the playoffs. That when you spend the amount of money and you bring in the profile of players that they have, that should be the expectation.
It would feel like if you don't get that in 2 years with Chicharito, that would probably be a failure. Your return on investment as far as on the field probably wouldn't be matching up. Brian Spencer says Alex Roldan has a foot injury. We might not see him in this game. Nico Ladero might be available. How much do we really care about this 0-2 start for the Sounders? Like, is it really just throw it out the window? They're distracted at CCL. It might affect them in a supporter shield run if that's something that they were looking to do, and we had pointed that out as a possibility for them, Dave. But like, is this overblown?
This is a club who's won MLS Cups when they've started this way before, and they didn't have CCL. So you add in the chance to win a trophy, to make history, to put themselves on a different pedestal, and then the history they have like this. No, you don't worry about it. You also look at how bizarre the two games were. You come off CCL, you've got Nashville at home, who are the best defensive team in the league, playing their first game of the year with all their energy. And then you go to RSL and there's a 2.5 hour weather delay in the 43rd minute. They started a rotated squad. Then they made like 8 subs at halftime. So I think it's fair. I give the benefit of the doubt to Seattle. I think they've earned that over time. I think this year shows that it should be there. And the performances has. If they can do what they did to Leon and Motagua, they can do it to MLS teams.
All right. Sunday, Atlanta, Charlotte, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes. That is our final national TV game of the weekend. Charlie, Charlotte thought they could do it better than everybody else. Interesting article from one Sam Stachkol at The Athletic this week about their roster build and maybe lessons that they didn't learn. This is the first matchup between these two teams down south in Atlanta. Atlanta coming off an L, trying to bounce back. What have you made of the Charlotte project so far? Do you think they're in for a bounce back? Do you think David Goss's 4-point guarantee has any chance of getting there? Was it 4 points from three games? I mean, two points minimum.
I would say, with all due respect to Charlotte, no.
I thought it was going to be respect to me.
Yeah, I didn't know who that was. Respect. Yeah, once you hit me with all due respect, like, all right, who's getting called trash? Like, who's getting it? I'm sorry. That's the preamble. I know this. I know the way this works. I know the second part of that sentence.
No, I mean, Goss is my boy, but Charlotte, they just have a lot of things they need to improve on, and they're going up against an Atlanta side that just got battered by Colorado Rapids, in the sense that you didn't have any possession in the final third compared to Colorado. And Colorado, we know how they play. They're not a possession-based team. They'll concede possession. And yet they still had more possession in the final third than Atlanta did, which is shocking to me. So in that sense, Atlanta is coming into this one saying, hey, we need to bounce back. And they're going to be hungry. They're going to be aggressive. And I don't think Charlotte will be as prepared, although it does play into their hands if they can defend and continue to try and build on being more organized and having a better performance defensively. Maybe an opportunity does come up for them on the counter, on a set piece, where they could win 1-0 get a draw, 1-1 draw or 0-0. So I think that's kind of what Charlotte needs to focus on, is being defensively sound.
So it looks like Thiago Almada is on his way to Atlanta. He's not there yet, and we know that Gonzalo Pineda told us in the interview earlier this year that that's the sort of player he thinks can help unlock things. Araujo is out with the injury. What's a best-case scenario for Atlanta in this match? Like, what would have people walking out of the bin saying, okay, yeah, that's what we expect from this team?
A 2-0 win.
You need, Yeah, you need a win. You need another guy to emerge right now. Whether it's Moreno being healthy, whether it's one of these young guys sort of giving you consistent minutes. You just look at the team that played against Colorado. You got George Campbell in central midfield. You've got Tyler Wolf sort of giving you big minutes on the wing. There just aren't that many options right now. If you don't have Almeida, if you don't have Sosa, if you don't have Araujo, and if you don't have, I'm blanking on someone else they don't have, then you're short on options. And we don't know what Ozzie Alonso's at right now because he wasn't used in that game over Campbell at defensive mid. So there's a lot of question marks. Oh, Jake Mourinho out as well. I think what you're looking for is who can step up right now, not to lead you for the season, but just give you a burst, a little bit of energy alongside Joseph, alongside the pieces that are there to get you a result or two until Almada can get the visa done, get in training, and become the player you want him to be.
And you want to see the burst from Joseph, right? Like, I don't know that
I don't think
we've
he can do
that.
It by himself. He's not there yet. And
I agree.
It's not going to happen. And I think that's the problem, is you can't rely on that. Someone else needs, Brooks Lennon needs to have a big game. Someone else needs to step up and help him because he's not the guy right now that can carry them by himself.
Well, I would add, though, in this case, Brooks Lennon is more of a wing back, right back, than he is an attacking player in Major League Soccer, right? So you look at that, Tyler Wolf, you know, I remember when he was 11 years old, maybe, when I was playing with Josh at DC United. And, you know, this is his first foray in getting proper minutes and playing time in Major League Soccer. There's going to be an adjustment for him as well. Now you're telling me those two are playing alongside Joseph Martinez? I think that's a lot of pressure for two players to come up with chances for Joseph, which when you're playing with a player of that stature and status in this league, your main goal, you know, going into it is to feed him and to make him happy, right? You're not necessarily playing your best game. You're just trying to basically make Joseph happy so you don't have to deal with any of this, any of the Higuain, like doing this, right? So, you know, I think this Atlanta side, right, for as gifted as they are when they're full strength, they should still be able to beat a Charlotte convincingly with the players that they have at their disposal. And I think that's what the fan base are going to be looking for, is can we be a little bit more multidimensional, like not just relying on Joseph to score goals for us. Yes, that's something that we have one of the best strikers when he's fit, but we got to be dynamic. We have to figure out different ways. Can we combine? Can we be effective on set pieces? This is where Atlanta United has to take a huge step forward if they want to compete.
I want to see them get Joseph in some situations where he feels confident and like it's a no-brainer for him to get going downhill a little bit. Whether that be in build-up where he has a run, he says, okay, I got to get to the near post because the delivery's coming. We've broke this team down. We got to the end line, perfect crossing zone, or in a counter-attacking situation. Just doesn't seem like he's been in a lot of situations through these first couple games where we see that old sort of like relentless, I see the opening, I trust that the ball's going to get there, Joseph.
No, because Tyler Wolf put it on his foot on the six on the run, and he whiffed on it.
Yeah, well, there's also moments like that. I'm not saying Joseph's like without service completely. He's just not the same player right now. I want to see him feel and seem like that player. All right, let's hit some ESPN Plus games. Colorado Rapids, Sporting Kansas City. This is a really good matchup on Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, late night, ESPN Plus. Question marks to center forward for both these teams, both coming off wins. Colorado, as we said, against Atlanta, 3-0. Sporting Kansas City barely squeaked past the Dynamo at home, 1-0. Remy Valter was the guy who scored that goal. And Cody Welton says, Dave, is Remy Valter a dark horse for the David Goss Theorem player of the season? Could he sniff his way in here? He's looked much improved.
Yeah, he has. And he's a guy who we thought would be a difference maker for them just because of ground coverage. And that's been a struggle for them over the last few years outside of Roger Espinoza. And so is there anyone who can just give them minutes, cover ground, make life easier for other players, fill in front of the back line, but also be able to scale forward and link up with the attack? And he lost his job and now he's back in it. But we've seen that work out before. And there was a reason they brought him in the first place. So, you know, that quality exists. So, yeah, 100% he comes in. Everyone's welcome under the tent. 100% he comes in.
This is your second year in the league. Welcome. All right. Yeah. Grab a coffee. Get a name tag. Welcome. Yeah, this is David Goss.
Also a dangerous one because he can't get under the theorem is I think Nikola Vujinic has arrived in KC. So I don't think he'll be available for this one. But he needs to split time with Kyrie Shelton. And so they're hoping that he's going to get up and running as fast as possible.
Let me ask you this question, Charlie, from Matthew Scheiman. He says, will any of you guys pick a Rapids player in your Golden Boot draft? I don't think we did in 10 rounds, I believe. So that question is answered.
Yeah.
Like, their goals have to come from somewhere, Matthew says. Charlie, who do you think is going to be the leading goal scorer for the Colorado Rapids in 2022?
I actually don't know if this is true, by the way.
No, I think we did select one. No one picked any player from Colorado Rapids.
I don't think that's true.
Not in the Doyle first did. Five rounds for sure. Who would have you picked? Who would
I think
who
he
would
picked
have
Jonathan
taken?
Lewis. I think he switched.
Oh, he might have.
To take Jonathan Lewis, who, by the way, would be my answer to this question, but it went to Charlie, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so he threw out Jonathan Lewis. Andre Shinashiki could be tossed in here. Diego Rubio could get in here.
Yeah, I would.
Michael Barrios is always a candidate, but you know we're talking Charlie's about like who can pick up 8 to 10.
I could smell it from Charlie.
If I had to choose one,
yes, that's what I'm asking. You have to choose one.
It would be Shinashiki.
Shinashiki.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll bounce back to the. Oh, he almost had double digits his first year. I want to say rookie of the year. All right, big one there. New York Red Bulls, Minnesota United, Aaron Long coming up in a second. This is on Sunday, March 13th. It's the final game of the weekend, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Plus. Comes after that Atlanta-Charlotte game. Red Bulls, are they for real? We'll ask Aaron Long, but they've got two road wins, and now they're coming home. This feels, Dave, like Gerhard Struber has found a little something, a little understanding on the field, a little bit of production from Lewis Morgan, not a little bit. Just like a better feel for who they are and with personnel that better fits what they are.
Yeah, and that's why they made moves, right? They brought in players who fit what they were looking for rather than maybe Struber taking over and trying to fit pieces in that already existed. So now it's his roster, it's his guys, and they have Tom Edwards coming in, which is a big piece for them defensively. But Aaron Long's return is huge. When you have the confidence in that back line, you make Sean Nealis's life easier. Whoever else is along them, his ability to pass out of the back. And even if you're looking for a knockdown, it's a better quality ball and it's finding the right guy. And it's right now Tom Barlow up top sort of being that battering ram to knock it down for Lewis Morgan or Klamala. But it will be Ashley Fletcher, who is a 26-year-old Premier League striker. And so I think there's a lot of hope for Red Bulls. Luquinhas hasn't even played yet, and he's a designated player acquisition. But it does feel like they are all players who understand how to be quick on that turnover, how to be aggressive in transition, but also be accurate with that first pass. And it's that first pass for them against TFC that got them going. All the turnovers that were dangerous, that first pass was clean into the pocket. And then whether it was back out to one of the wingers or the fullbacks getting up the field, or again, turning from there and attacking from Frankie Meyer or Lewis Morgan or any of those guys, that's been really effective. We didn't see that as much last year, and it feels like they have options in the attack for the first time in years.
2 points from two games for Minnesota United. They're looking to bounce back here on ESPN Plus, the final game of the weekend. Charlie and I will go live, I want to say at the end of this one, Charlie. We'll have to put it out there on in Twitter Spaces, MLS After Dark, Saturdays and Sundays now. And by the way, if you like MLS Today, Dave's doing that every day, 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces. If you like the Power Rankings show on Tuesday with Doyle and I, MLS After Dark, all those are now on a podcast feed. So you can double up. Of course, you're subscribed to Extra Time. If you're not, go hit subscribe, but then go to MLS Today, wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe as well. All right, let's get to our interview with Aaron Long. Had a really nice chat with him. All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field, to New Jersey, to the Red Bull Training Center, to Aaron Long. What's up, Aaron? How's it going, man?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you here, and we'll get into the soccer and the serious and all that, but we do something on this show called Instagram Reporter, in which we just talk about random things we saw on Instagram, and there are rumors that there was a helicopter at your recent wedding that was seen via the Instagram stories of Red Bull's teammates. So I have to ask you, did you indeed have a helicopter at your wedding?
I did, yeah, but there's definitely a backstory that I need to lay out so it doesn't sound like it's like a super high profile thing.
It feels a little bit like, you know, when you see the choppers on a Friday afternoon going to the Hamptons, going over the city. It feels a little bit like that. Not quite.
But they did fly us in. That was like our grand entrance. Me and my wife got to fly in on the helicopter as well. But the year before was obviously COVID. So all the December weddings got pushed back to now our year of the weddings. So when we were looking for venues, there's nothing available in California. So we got a place that was really close to my grandparents' house, and it was an airport hangar. And the way that they compete in California against these other amazing venues is they offer a free helicopter ride for you as a grand entrance and for all your guests throughout the wedding. because it had an airport hangar. So it was one of the perks of picking that venue. But yeah, it was really cool.
Nice, man. You've had a big couple of years here. I know on the personal side, I mean, obviously we'll talk about the injury and the comeback and everything there, but it's not just the marriage, it's fatherhood. And look, three of us are fathers here on this show, Dave, so you can't make me not talk about it. Tell me how your
just
life has changed.
Just don't talk about golf and I'm fine.
All right, that's fine. I'll keep golf out of this.
Yeah, I mean, everyone tells you your life is going to change and, you know, your world's going to kind of flip upside down and now your schedule daily is going to revolve around your kid, but I think you don't really know until it hits you, right? But yeah, as you guys know, every day kind of revolves around my daughter and, you know, nap schedules and what we can do and when we can shop and all those things. But yeah, it's amazing. She's beautiful. She's healthy, so can't ask for more.
What's your favorite dad chore? It's not a chore, you know, but like a duty that, you know, the moment in the day that you like the most with your kid.
Probably putting her down for bed. I don't get to do it as often as I want to because, you know, we're on the road and I was in December camp and January camp and then preseason. So I missed a lot of time there. But I like to, you know, lay her down, put her in the sleep sack, give her milk, you know, read her a little bedtime story, put her down. It's a special moment for me.
Yeah. You know, I think it's time that we're going to switch over to a little bit of soccer. You know, I love the father talk.
All right, that's it. That's all I had, Charlie.
Oh,
take the reins.
Okay,
man.
Good. Yeah. Well, I had the opportunity to first meet you with Sasha Kleshtin, who is one of my closest friends, you know, from the game. And he always talked about what a bright future you had in front of you. And you go on to win MLS Defender of the Year, now the national team, all these European teams now interested in you. And you go down with the Achilles injury. And I reached out. I was one of the first people I felt like to reach out to you and say, hey, if you ever need to talk to somebody, you need some advice, like I'm here. How did you deal with those first couple of days after that injury? And how'd you kind of pick yourself up and keep going? And, you know, who helped you along the way?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, thank you for reaching out in that moment. You were one of the few guys, and you were someone that I knew had gone through something like that with an injury. So I think I wrote back to you that I might reach out to you in the near future if I was struggling with anything. Luckily, I was able to get over that hump and mentally get over that pretty quickly. But yeah, I think, like you said, the first couple of days are the hardest, especially because it was my first big injury. There's just a lot of uncertainty, and you're getting timetables from your club 9 to 12 months, and then you go see your surgeon and he's telling you, you know, probably more on the 12 month side, and then you're talking to guys that have been through the injury. I'm reaching out to Kevin Durant's the guy that moved in with Kevin Durant. I'm like, hey, what's going on here? He was back training at 8 months, and it's like, you know, there's just so much uncertainty, and it's like, what does the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months look like for me, let alone, you know, when am I getting this surgery in the next couple of days? So but after things started calming down and it was a little bit more, you know, once I got the surgery, I could see the road that was projected in front of me by my team, what the steps were going to be to get back to it. I think mentally I was able to flip that switch.
I know Charlie will already know this, but for the layman like us, give us an idea of this experience, how it's managed between your club, the people that you have, that you hire professionally, the U.S. national team camp. How do all these pieces sort of come together to help you figure out the process, the rehab, where you are at, what you need to be doing?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm super lucky and thankful that I had so many people in my corner. And being here in New York, I feel like I'm very fortunate to have the surgeon that I had, you know, the guy that did Kevin Durant's Achilles. So I felt very comfortable and safe in those moments. And then more than anything, I think I had a lot of people that were asking me questions like, how do you want to do this? You know, we've given you the options here. Where do you want to do your rehab? Do you want to do it here at the club? Do you want to do it in Manhattan? Do you want to go to Austria with in Salzburg with the Red Bull facility? There's a lot of different options. The national team was reaching out. Hey, how can we help? What can we give you? They loaned out equipment that they thought would be really helpful. So there's so many people that kind of without me necessarily reaching out and asking for it, they just offered up help and they really wanted to see me get back. And I kind of credit everyone that helped me through the process for why I was able to be training at 6 months and going into the national team camp in December and January at, you know, 7 and 8 months, way, way before schedule. So yeah, just really thankful to everyone.
Do you feel like where you're at pre-injury? Like, how do you feel right now? How would you compare it to like, you know, pre-injury till now?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm 100%, but I feel really good, really, really good. I feel fit. I trust in the rehab. I trust in the process that I've done. I'm able to go 90 minutes. I feel strong. I feel, you know, all my numbers are the same, you know, my acceleration and my sprint and my jump. So I know that I'm hitting all those metrics again, but I think more than anything, it's just going to take a couple more games to get back into it. Obviously the two wins are helping with my confidence and helping with the team's confidence here. But I feel really good, really, really good right now.
I would say, you know, you're seeing all these people reach out, say, hey, we can help you here. We can help you here. That's got to drive you at the same time, because you know that everyone's there supporting you and is going to give you whatever you need to get back on the pitch sooner than later. What was your, I'm curious, what was the lowest point post-surgery for you? Let's say, you know, it's a month or 2 months after and you're thinking, man, I should be able to do X, Y, Z and I can't yet. What was that low point for you? And then where you are now today, what do you have in the immediate future for you? What is there a goal, something that you're trying to drive yourself towards?
Yeah. Lowest point was definitely probably the day after I got injured. There was like a day lull in between the surgery. You got to get the surgery really quickly. So I drove back from Philly the next day. I just had a couple meetings with different people about where I was going to get the surgery, what time. My head was scrambled. So that's probably the lowest. But then also there was a low point when I first got the boot off and I tried to take my first couple steps without it. And in my head, I'm like, okay, yeah, I get to walk now. And there was so much pain and I had a huge limp. And right away the doubt creeps in and you're like, what is going on? How is this going to feel? Am I going to be the same? All that stuff started happening. Luckily again, next couple days, things evened out. And now I'm here today feeling great, but that was definitely a low point. I guess the biggest goal in the near future, probably winning the home opener, being 3-0. That's huge. And a national team camp coming up, hoping to get called in and get some minutes.
All right, let's go to the Red Bulls, because you said you want to get back, and now these two wins feel good. You guys are cruising. You have seen in this league Red Bulls at their best, setting points records, winning Supporters Shield in the Red Bull way, high pressing in the system. It feels like it's clicking right now. How does it feel? How does it look to you compared to what it's been at its best?
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet. I think we lost a lot of pieces last year and we've gained a couple pieces back, but we haven't had a chance to integrate all those pieces. Again, they're two really good performances on the road, really, really good performances. And the way that we're creating chances in transition and the fact that we're scoring these chances that we weren't scoring last year is really good. But there's a lot of things in film right now that we can iron out. We're facing some really good opponents coming up. So we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. I'm not going to say that we're, you know, the team of the past when we're winning Supporters Shield and setting the points record. It's way too early to tell right now. But we are confident and we want to win this next game for sure.
How does Gerhard talk to you guys in the locker room about expectations and goals? Because in the public, in the media, and he's really only had one public statement this year. He sort of tamped them down. He said, hold on. We're young. And as you said, like, we haven't reinforced again. We still need to bring those players in. But Luquinhos is coming on the DP deal. You got Ashley Fletcher coming. You've got some of these other guys like Lewis Morgan looking like he belongs. How do you guys talk internally about expectations and goals?
Yeah, I think we want to manage it, right? I think last year we had a pretty good start, and then we had a big lull in the middle of the season, and we finished amazing with that huge run to make the playoffs. So more than anything, I think he's preaching to the team that there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs throughout this season. We're a young group. We need to manage expectations. We need to be ready for those hard moments. When we're flying high like we are right now, we can't get cocky. We can't go into this home opener thinking, oh, yeah, we're amazing. We're the team of the past. We're going to smash these guys. Like, it can never be that. We got to reset and get our mentality back to zero and come out full go.
I don't know if you could sense it, Aaron, but Goss was so hyped to ask that Red Bull question because he's such a huge supporter of your club.
You're such a troll, Charlie.
It was good to see
you. Aaron knows I'm a Red Bull 2 guy. Aaron's one of our legends. He's one of our GOATs, former USL Defender of the Year.
When Let's 2 go. Is number 1 in your heart, all right?
Yeah.
From the bottom, man.
Yeah, you talked about where you are right now and kind of the expectations. What has surprised you the most to start this year when you're looking at this team? I mean, I'm not going to lie. I never saw a 4-1 win on the road at TFC in the second game of the season from you guys. But it seems like, man, you have an identity, and he's took it up a whole nother notch for you guys. What's been the biggest surprise for you?
Yeah, I mean, Gerhard is so good, like you're saying. He takes this Red Bull way and the high press and the playing quick and transition and playing forward and playing direct. He takes it to a new level. And again, it does take time. And I think last year we had a few growing pains and we ironed it out towards the end of the year. But I think the most promising thing for me right now is in transition, the way that we're creating those chances in the box. We're getting looks in front of goals. That last year we were having a lot of one goal games or zero goal games, and we weren't, it's not that we just weren't scoring, but we weren't creating as much as I wanted to. So now, even in that Toronto game or San Jose game, there were still goals that were really good chances that we missed. So it's the fact that we're creating these good chances that I'm most excited about right now.
Tell me about the difference now versus sort of the past when you entered this first team, because, you know, I think back to that past, you had all these sort of shining lights of Red Bull history, whether it be Dax or BWP or Luis or Sasha or so many other names, and you kind of got to integrate in, and now you feel like you're them, right? You're wearing the captain's armband. You have a young team that you are guiding. How is the culture and the environment around you different between then and now?
Yeah, I mean, that part's crazy. The fact that I'm the skipper and the oldest guy or one of the oldest guys, that part's pretty crazy. You know, I feel like I'm still a young kid at heart. But yeah, I think the biggest change for me is how we've recruited these young guys that fit the Red Bull system more so, that are young, that can run forever, that can put up these huge numbers in games for sprint distances. And that's what we really need in the system. As opposed to the past when we had this unbelievable quality and these veterans that we converted into the Red Bull system. And you can do it both ways, but it's just a different approach now, a younger approach, a faster approach. And it makes our game a little bit different. And again, we're going to have those moments where we're lacking a little bit of quality in the final third last year when we don't have Sasha Kleshin and Bradley Wright Phillips. But I mean, the way that we can be relentless in our press and relentless in the way we run forward, and these guys do not get tired. It's something different. And it's really cool. It's really exciting to see.
We got to ask you about Brad, because a big week for him. But first, I want to get to one of those young players. You used to be the cool haircut, cocky, swaggy defender. Now it's John Tolkien doing his thing.
Rufio!
Give me a vibe check on what this kid's like, what he's capable of. I mean, I've not seen a lot of left backs go with the hair and just start trying to take guys on 1v1 whenever he wants.
Yeah, he's a guy that I can relate to a little bit. You know, I'm injured last year, took him under my wing, cut his hair, bleached his hair for him.
Nice.
Well, wait, that's where this is coming
from. So it's you.
It's not. No, no, no. Trust me, it's definitely him. All him. But I'm the guy that's, you know, behind the scenes when he may be a little bit like, do I go for the mullet? I'm like, yes. Do I bleach it? Absolutely. I'll buy you the bleach. No problem. I'll bring it in the facility, you know? So it was a way for him to be my little puppet with the hair last year. But yeah, he's super talented, man. And again, he's one of those guys that can fly up and down the field. He's got an engine for days, quality. And again, I think he's 18, right? Maybe 19, maybe 17. He went to prom last year. That's all I know. So,
so you're encouraging him. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like making Hook references, and it occurs to me that maybe he doesn't know what Hook is or was not alive when Hook came out to even know
he
what Rufio.
Not. I don't know.
Like, I
don't
when
know
I say Rufio, he probably just look at me blankly and be like, yeah, okay, dude, like, what are you talking about?
He probably has no idea. I remember last year we were playing in, I don't know, at Nashville or Atlanta, and everyone was giving him the Ric Flair, like, woo, the whole game. Every time he touched the ball, it was so funny, man. I was dying.
Let's hit BWP before we keep it rolling here. What a legend. What a gift for our league, I would say, to have Bradley come and be on trial and then get the contract and then just make what he did of his time in Major League Soccer. When I asked you the question about sort of the difference between when you came in, when you went out, I always saw those old Red Bull guys and the like social connection you guys had. You'd always see pictures of you guys out or going and doing things in the city or at Central Park or hanging out. And it was always like Dax and Sasha and you and Bradley. Tell me about Bradley, both the player, but also the person that you got to know over these years.
Yeah. Like you said, we're so lucky and blessed to have him in this league, but now to have him back at the club and to see him around the facility the last couple of days, like I am beaming. I'm buzzing. I love this guy. And obviously I don't have to talk to the player that he was. His stats kind of speak to that for him. And the fact that his jersey's retired here, but the person that he is and the way that he got this group together off the field, I mean, he is the guy that was out and brought the guys with him, like, hey, it doesn't matter if you're a young guy or an old guy. I was a rookie, and he's like, Aaron, you're out tonight. Let's go. Everyone together. And it really brings that camaraderie within the group. And we were so close. And to have him back, and a guy I know he loves New York City. I know he loves New Jersey. I know he loves this club and this organization. It's a huge, huge plus for us. Seriously.
Oh, so we're talking about one of the greatest strikers of all time in Major League Soccer, and Bradley Wright Phillips. We also did our top strikers for this year, our top five. I'm curious to know who your top five strikers are in the league. When you're out on the pitch, you're like, man, this is going to be a game. Like, I got to come with my A game to deal with these strikers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Vela's up there. Rui Diaz is up there. Eastern Conference, let's think here.
And what makes them difficult for you? If when you're having to deal with them, what is it that they do that you're like, man, this is a matchup?
I think it always depends, right? Everyone brings a little bit something different to the table. A guy like Vela, he will create his own space. He'll create his own chance. You got to keep him off his left foot, super dangerous. But if you overplay it, he'll just cut you onto his right. You know, he's super dangerous in that way. A guy like Rui Diaz, maybe he's not as on the ball, prolific and slippery in that way. But if you give him any chance, he will bury it for sure. He's an assassin. He's a sniper. So I think depending on the player that I'm playing, I know what their strength is, and I try to play it to that.
Feels like Tati would be one. From Tati's the Eastern Conference, though, maybe you haven't seen because of the injury some of like the prime Tati, like the early days Tati you would have gotten.
I've seen plenty of this guy.
He knows.
Really good player, though. Really good player. Yeah, he's another guy who came onto the scene big last year, but having played against him multiple times, yeah, really good.
Before we move on to the U.S. national team side, we talked to you about it quickly in the pre, but like Red Bull's captains over the years, you know, a lot of these names we've mentioned here, they were captain and then they were gone. And if transfer market and everything is around, the news around you is correct, you would be out of contract at the end of this season and you would be free agent eligible. And there have been times in the past where there's been an ambition and an opportunity to go overseas. So it seems like there could be an opportunity for you here to choose your own destiny, so to speak. How much do you think about that? How much does that matter to you? I know it's easy to say, oh, cliche, down the line, but like we're all human. We all know how this stuff works. It's hard to push that out.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked hard and I've sacrificed a lot to get to this point in my career where I can make my own destiny and make my own choice at the end of this year. So I'm not blind to it. I'm not going to say that, you know, let's look down the road. But one thing that's for sure is I need to have the best season of my career this year to give myself as many chances as possible at the end of this year. Whether that's re-signing here, whether that's going abroad, whether that's making a move in the MLS, I need to have an amazing year this year. And lucky for me, I'm more motivated than ever being out all last year. So I'm ready to go, man.
I love that. I love that because it could have easily been the thought process of, man, I had an Achilles injury. Europe is done. I can't, like, that dream of playing overseas, it's never going to happen. Although you bounce back, you have a full season. World Cup's at the end of the year, not, you know, typically in the summer. So, man, a lot of things in front of you.
Some coaches in Europe now, too.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know. It's like there's a guy at Man U and at Leeds. There's a couple of these guys.
Yeah, these American coaches coming up in the game, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. Just don't do a huddle on the field. Apparently, don't do a huddle.
Yeah. What's the big deal with this? We did that so many times here in New York. I don't understand.
They do it in England too. They just noticed it because Jesse's the coach now. Let's ask you about national team though. You were in with the team while you were hurt. They kept you close. You stayed involved with them. It felt like you are a big part of Greg Berhalter's plans. Now you're back on the field. Now you're playing. What's your expectations of when you can get back into that team and sort of what's your thought process about how that happens and what this year looks like?
I mean, there is no expectations, you know, nothing's given. Everything's earned in this business. I think Greg has proved that you have to be in form. You have to be playing well or you won't get called in. I'm no exception there. I think the reason that I'm called in December and in January is because they care about me as a person, as a player, and they want to give everything they can for my rehab to get me back to the player that I was, to give myself a chance to get back in this team. It's not, hey, let's bring him in because he's a guaranteed spot on this roster. It's like, no, let's get him around the group. It'll be good for him to free his mind a little bit. And there's a lot of eyes here and a lot of talent on that medical staff that they can get their eyes on me and work with me. And again, forever grateful that they were able to do that. And I credit a lot of my progress to them, but I have to be in form and I have to be playing well. Otherwise, I won't get called in, and there is no expectation that I'll be called in this camp or that I'll play games this camp. Nothing like that, man. I got to grind for sure.
When you, I want to rewind back. We were talking about the injury and sort of the moments after, the day after, talking to Greg. Maybe I'm hallucinating. I remember you at Nations League final within the locker room and like as part of that group. Am I remembering that correctly? No. I'm not remembering that correctly. They had you there when you weren't available. Is that correct? Like to actually play?
No, I missed so much, man. I missed everything. I feel like that's why I'm so pent up in terms of like, I feel like a junkyard dog that's been chained to the floor for a year, you know? I missed Gold Cup. I missed Nations League. I was available I was there in December for a Mexico game at home. I wasn't even training with the group. I was doing rehab off to the side with one of the sports scientists there. And they were working on some numbers and my sprint numbers and acceleration numbers, things like that. It was more of a testing, and it was amazing to see the group. But that was just in the December. I think there was 1 week in December I was there, and then the January camp.
My memory was not correct in this sense. Can I ask you what Greg asked of you as a center back and the center backs on this team within the system, and how that maybe differs from what you're used to?
Yeah, I think the style is very different. Or actually, it's growing a little bit more similar in the way that we're pressing now with the national team and we press here. I think with the ball, it's a little bit different. We need to control the tempo. We need to be able to manipulate the strikers. We need to be able to break the lines. We have to recognize how they're pressing and if they change that press, what if they're playing with three up top, two up top. There's a lot of things that as center backs and even the goalkeeper when we play out in the system that we have to recognize and kind of be able to change on the fly. And then more than anything, we need shutouts and we need to win aerial duels, things like that defensively. And here at Red Bull, it's a little bit different. We play high tempo. We can play long. We win second balls, things like that. But I think on the ball is a bigger difference than our press now. Our press is a little bit more similar.
All right. Red Bulls, Minnesota this weekend, Sunday, March 13th, MLS Live on ESPN Plus at 7 p.m. Eastern, the final game of this weekend, week three. Charlie and I will be on MLS Live after dark, or MLS Spaces after dark, whatever it is, after that game's over, to run you through the MLS weekend. But Aaron, we appreciate your time, man. Good luck with everything. And anybody who wants to get married, California is the land of helicopters, so keep that in mind.
That's right. RIP Kobe. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, man. Seriously.
All the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Gago Slonina, Aaron Long, got a good little run here going on interviews. If you want to hear from anybody within the league, outside the league, in Europe, MLS ties, whatever, hit us up. Let us know. 401-206-0MLS, extra time on Twitter, or extra time at MLSsoccer.com via email. Hit the mailbag here. Teft says, do any of the CCL teams miss the playoffs this year? Sounders are not going to, in my opinion. Obviously, that's an easy limb for me to climb right out onto. Revs will not. NYCFC will not. Who else is out there? Montreal might. Rapids, I don't think they'll miss. I think they'll be solidly mid-table playoff team in the West. So to me, it's Montreal.
Yeah. Anybody disagree? I agree with you. I still think Montreal, especially with they're saying Mason Toy still on their timetable. I think you get that boost at some point during the season. The young guys in central midfield, it feels like, are actually going to help them manage Wanyama through the year, whether playing for him or just alongside him in covering ground. Alistair Johnson, that additional boost to the back line, that flexibility to go four in the back, three, whatever it is. So I still believe all five teams will make the playoffs.
All right. How about this? The Mickey Mouse. I'm not going to read that. That name. Kevin Kuhlman, 9. Over under 10.5 goals for Jimmy Chara this year. 10 goals in his previous two seasons, Charlie. So over under 10.5 goals for Jimmy Chara and the Portland Timbers. He's got two incredible goals. Portland are going to host Austin 10 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night, ESPN Plus. Austin, of course, undefeated and absolutely rolling and really feeling themselves right now. But over under 10.5 goals.
That's a good line. I'm going to go with over.
Over.
Yep.
So that would be 8 goals the rest of the way.
Yep.
I'm going to say over as well, because I think he's going to be asked to be a bigger piece and more is going to be built around him than has been in the past with Sebastian Blanco there. Though Blanco has been out at times. But I think with him central more in like goal scoring positions, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to say over. But a lot of me says hit the under just based on past history in MLS for Jimmy.
I'm going to say over, and not just because of the position, because he has played there a ton, just the way the talent's built around him now. I think Niashkoda isn't an elite finisher, but he is a chance creator, a center forward, and Moreno's the best player he'll ever play with in the attack when Blanco's out. So I just think there's pieces around him to help set him up, and he's like his brother, a monster for minutes. Like he's going to play 3,000 minutes this year. He's going to be out there consistently, and I think he'll get those goals.
Eric Grote, who's your top five in American managers' power rankings? This is an interesting one. Ooh. So you have Jesse Marsh out there, 3G, Greg Berhalter, Bruce Arena, Schmetzer, Curtin, Vermees. You can go anywhere. You could go all around. So who would be number one in our American managers' power rankings right now?
Oof.
So, I mean, to me,
it's tough because a lot of the names have not come off great spells. Because you also have Pellegrino.
Yeah, Pellegrino.
But they're in a relegation battle. Jesse just got let go. Bob Bradley.
But he just got hired. But he just got hired in the Premier League.
He did, but not. You haven't seen anything yet.
He might not be in the Premier League for long.
Let go.
It's hard not to put Bruce at the top.
Yeah.
Wow. Just like overall.
2022.
I know, man. Wow. Overall career, where he has the revs, what he's done with that organization. It would be hard not to have. So let's just say Bruce is one.
Yep.
I'd say Bob 2, Jesse 3.
Say Bob 2.
I think Bob Bradley's the best American manager right now.
Okay.
The soccer.
But I'm asking, but it's a power ranking. So it's not like who is.
And just curious, why right now, if Bruce is the all-time leading goals, wins in MLS and had the best team in the regular season last year?
Because the way LAFC played the year before in setting their record, or 2 years before, I don't know what time is anymore, is more impressive than what the Revs did. What the Revs did was incredible. LAFC played a different brand of soccer and did it at that level as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm signing up for. If that's the conversation I'm having, I would also say, as great a manager as Bruce is, I don't see him turning Marc-Anthony Kay and Latif Blessing into what they've become. I think they're good at different things, and
could you not say that DeJuan Jones,
Matt
and
Turner?
Brandon Bae, and Matt Turner, for
I
instance.
Think, well, Matt, Tajon
Buchanan. Like, let's
I don't
not,
know that we're okay. So, can I answer any of these?
Yeah, sure,
I don't know that I'm
there.
Giving him
I got a
Matt
list,
Turner.
I got a list going here.
Yeah, Brad Friedel gets credit there. Matt Turner gets credit there. And the other guys you named are great. One, Tajon was a Generation Adidas player that maybe we didn't know he'd go here. But there are expectations. The other two you named are phenomenal, Bae and DeJuan Jones. Those are turning players into fullbacks, which is a different position than your center midfield being built around guys who have never played the position before.
Okay. That's
and fine. Doing just, it at an elite level.
Who would be the third in our top three? If we're going to go a top three American managers power rankings right now, who would be the third?
Greg or Jesse, I think.
Greg or Jesse. All right. Well, let us know what you think. A lot of names out there. I would love to hear from you.
I see colleges in there.
I don't know enough about the college game to chime in.
Just think about the coaches who have developed a lot of the talent that have come, you know, through Major League Soccer. If you're looking at Sasho with Maryland, you're looking at Bobby Muse with Wake Forest, you're looking at George Galnovac with UVA, who's been there for a long time.
Yep.
I think it's
Brian Weiss at Georgetown.
I think those coaches definitely deserve some credit.
Be interesting to see, like, you know, at the academy level as well. If we're talking college, I mean, all these kids coming through the academy, there's a lot of influence on players all over the country. And I think we're in actually like a golden era of American coaching. And part of that is having players and coaches overseas and also succeeding more at home and developing talent. So let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com or at extra time on Twitter. Subscribe, rate us. We're out of here.
I forgot. I can't forget. What? Coach Noonan from Clemson, they just won the national championship. So throw that out there as well.
Okay, we got an ACC guy in here. Yeah. How's the construction in your house, Charlie? I don't know if anybody else heard the pounding and banging throughout. You got to let them know.
Yeah, it's good now. We're all set.
All right, we're all set. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see you on Monday, everybody. Wrapping up week three. Enjoy the weekend. All the scores, all the highlights, the standings, everything. MLSsoccer.com. Adios.